Welcome to the Silver Screen Podcast. I'm Jared Boomer.
And I'm Katie Gainey West. This is a podcast about movies and pop culture.
And today we have our top 10 movies of 2022, our favorites, and we're going to talk about Oscar nominations as well. So both of those things on the show today. Katie, I think this is one of our favorite episodes we do every year where we run down our top 10 movies. We don't share our list beforehand, so we don't know what the other person picked. So
no, it is. You're right. It's absolutely one of my favorite episodes. And while we were talking, while we were preparing, I even had someone text me and say, like, what Best Picture noms do you still need to see? So I feel like the people know. I always get a lot of texts on nomination day. Do you do that as well?
Sometimes, yeah. Or like, yeah, not so much maybe nomination day, but as we get closer to the ceremony, people start asking me, what's supposed to win? Like, what's the favorite?
Yeah. I think people want to know. I usually won't tell Arjun or my brother things because I don't want to enter into a just even for fun ballot guessing game or whatever. I don't want to tell them. But I figured, I wrote one thing in our notes today, Jared, that I feel like we can give to the people, and it's Best Supporting Actor, I feel like, is a shoo-in this year. So that's the one freebie I will give people and say this is likely. But otherwise, I'm probably not going to give much of an opinion on that. And what was the other? Oh, I did hear from Sean a lot on nomination day, and he said he hoped I was proud because he was like looking that stuff up and caring about it that day. Yeah.
Very nice.
I know. I was like, Sean, it's so nice. It's nice to hear from him in Spain too. That's been exciting.
That's cool. Yeah. So, well, I bet the Oscar nominations were what, like in the afternoon there for him?
I don't know. They're 6 hours ahead.
8:30 in the morning. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So it was afternoon. So. And then also he's been catching up. I told you on the pod, but he is purposefully leaving out episodes. If it's a movie he really wants to see for like Oscars or whatever, he's like not listening to our episode till he watches it.
Makes sense. So, okay. Well, we do have one correction from our Babylon episode. Katie, what do you have on this?
Okay. So this isn't much of a correction. I wanted to apologize because I Jared and I listen to every episode, both to like for continuity, for editing, for everything. And I really came down hard on the opinion that Babylon is a retelling of Singing in the Rain. I still don't agree with that, but I read an article this week. I should have cited it, but I didn't. But it was saying, I think it was talking about it being snubbed, like it's not nominated for things. But it was saying just like how that's kind of like a modern day retell. It basically said that. I just wanted to admit fault. I can see similarities in Singing in the Rain, but I don't think it's an outright retelling of Singing in the Rain. I think it's more original than that. And I think it borrowed ideas. And you know how sometimes you'll see a clip, like in the movie of Babylon, we see clips from Singing in the Rain. So then you attach it with, oh, that's exactly what this is.
Yes.
I'm worried that that's what happened with people. And they were like, oh, well, that's what it is. It's Singing in the Rain, because they saw that and it was in their mind. I could be wrong. I might be thinking too much, but I think I've also been unfair. I still don't want to watch Avatar. I still don't like Avatar, but I think that happened with me with Avatar, because I remember when that movie came out, people started talking about Pocahontas. They were like, this movie is Pocahontas. And I thought, oh yeah, there's a talking tree. There's blue people. There's all this. And I fully just bought into that, but I can't really tell you that I remember a lot of specifics about Avatar where I can say point for point, this is Pocahontas. So I just wanted to, I'm trying to be more fair. I'm trying to be like a little more critical of things and think things through. So those are my thoughts.
Understandable. Yeah. And I think those movies do get, like, Babylon does get comparisons to Singing in the Rain, and the first Avatar and the second Avatar obviously get compared because they're sequels. And the first Avatar is, like you said, similar to the storyline of Pocahontas in certain aspects. So, and just to the point we are in movies and how many movies have been made, there's still opportunities for original stories, obviously, but some movies are going to pull things from other movies sometimes as well. So, okay. On to our recommendations. I don't really have anything this week. I've just been watching movies for this top 10. So some of my recommendations will probably come in my top 10 movies of the year. But other than that, I don't really have much.
Yeah, you're kicking my rear. Jared and I talked before we started recording, and I have this list of like 15 movies that I was like, I want to watch these before the Oscars in 6 weeks, which I could do, but I'm also in a play. I also have a full-time job, you know, so we'll see, but challenge accepted. Again, it's like the book race at the end of the year all over. But I did read read one book this week. I actually, to be transparent, I have about 30 pages left, but I am loving this book. It was actually hard for me to not read it before recording the episode tonight. It's called What Lies in the Woods by Kate Alice Marshall. And it was a book of the month pick. I want to say it was a January pick. Like, it was one of my first books for the year this year. This Kate woman is a thriller writer, but she usually writes YA. This is her first adult thriller. And it is a great adult debut thriller, and it's super spooky. I have one con. I'll write my review in Goodreads about it, but I think it's excellent. And I think actually by the end of this month, if I finish my Michelle Obama book, I'll have read 10 books this month. And it's one of the only good ones I've read this month. So if that tells you anything, sorry. But it's a good thriller, and I can't really tell you much. I don't want to spoil any of it, but it's about girls. Somebody gets stabbed brutally when they're young, but they survive the stabbing. They grow up. There's kind of a conspiracy theory about who actually did this. And these girls were kind of up to some nefarious witchy activities when they were little. And it's all very interesting. And there's already been one like surprise thing that I didn't see coming at all. And I'm really shocked when a thriller does that, when something happens and I'm like, I did not see that coming. So it's been very good. And again, that's, let me make sure I get the title right. I'm sorry. Again, it's What Lies in the Woods by Kate Alice Marshall.
Nice. Yeah. I feel like sometimes thrillers can be predictable, especially if you read a lot of them. You kind of understand the twists and turns and where they're headed. But it's nice when one's a little more original. So, okay. Now we'll get into talk about the Oscars first. We're going to do Oscar nominations first and then our top 10 movies of 2022. We're not going to go through every... I will go through Best Picture. We're not going to go through every category and list off every single nominee.
Right.
Because that's boring to listen to. And
you
also
can look that up.
Public information. Yeah.
Yeah.
I will go through Best Picture, though. So the Oscars will be on March 12th of this year at the Dolby Theater, 95th Oscars, hosted by Jimmy Kimmel once again on ABC once again. A little bit later this year for the Oscars. Usually they're in February, but they are in March now. So they have moved to March. And also, we have some facts for you here in just a second once I run down the Best Picture nominees. So the Academy decided to choose 10 nominees for Best Picture this year. And they are the following: All Quiet on the Western Front, Avatar The Way of Water, The Banshees of Inisherin, Elvis, Everything Everywhere All at Once, The Fabelmans, Tar, Top Gun Maverick, Triangle of Sadness, and Woman Talking. And if you're curious, we have episodes on Avatar The Way of Water, Elvis, Everything Everywhere All at Once, and Top Gun Maverick. And our plan is, at least we're going to try to stick to it, to review the rest of the Best Picture nominees before the Oscars on March 12th that we have not had episodes on yet. So,
and I'm very dedicated to trying to see as many of these films as possible. I'm not sold on seeing Avatar, but I will tell you, I'm thinking about it. We'll see. It might be the last one I care about seeing, though. But I am trying to be, like I said, a little bit more critical this year. And Jared, I might have some surprises in my favorite films of 2020.
Okay.
I feel like there's a couple I gave them a second glance and I changed my mind a little bit, not a huge amount, but I think I've got a couple surprises.
Yeah. I moved mine around a lot, even this afternoon, like trying to settle on a final list. So, so let's get into some info about the Oscars here. And this is from a article from The Hollywood Reporter called Oscar Nominations Analysis. The biggest winner of all is, wait for it, The Academy by Scott Feinberg. And also articles on Variety and CNN. So we have some interesting facts and then we'll go over some snubs for you. So Andrea Riseborough, who was in Triangle of Sadness, basically... There was really no thought, she's in Two Leslie, excuse me. There was basically no thought that she was going to get a nomination for Best Actress. And she just kind of snuck in there and ran her own campaign for the last couple of weeks and got nominated for Best Actress alongside Cate Blanchett, Michelle Williams, Michelle Yeoh, and Ana de Armas, of all people, and Michelle Williams. So, but that was kind of surprising to see her get nominated for that movie.
Yeah, I have told Jared this. I'm not upset that she got nominated. I'm not like offended by it. And I don't think the campaign that she ran was bad. I'm just a little shocked. I'll be transparent. I'm more upset about Kate Blanchett. I'm more upset. Michelle Williams, I'm happy to see because she's been nominated 5 times. Like, it'd be great for her to win. But at the same time, I just feel like the Ana de Armas one made me mad. Actually made me really mad. Because yeah. Ana did a really good job, but I think she's capable of better. And I think that movie was so abysmal that it is offensive. Now she is Latina. She is from Cuba. Like, that's exciting. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, we're just looking at a bunch of white people again, and that's upsetting. And Michelle Yao is literally the only diversity up there. Key is also diversity for the men. But I don't know. I was just bothered by it. Now, I haven't seen Andrea's performance. Maybe I'm going to be blown away. I bet I'll be blown away by Kate Blanchett. I love her. She's a goddess. I was just so disheartened. I told Jared when he texted me, I was like, I'm going to have to talk to you in a minute. So I was just so upset.
So yeah, that was kind of surprising that she got nominated. Also, John Williams at 90 years old became the oldest Oscar nominee in history with his original score nomination for The Fabelmans. It's his 53rd nomination, which is the most nominations for a living person. And he just extends his own record. And that same movie, Judd Hirsch at 87 lands his second nomination in the category of Best Supporting Actor, which is 42 years after he got his first one, which came for Ordinary People. So that's a pretty cool fact as well. And then in the songwriting category, Diane Warren, who received an honorary Oscar just after she received an honorary Oscar, has received her 14th nomination for Best Original Song, and she has yet to win.
That would be kind of exciting for her.
Yeah, and I feel like that's kind of, if you're Diane Warren, you're like, I've written 14 bangers, and none of them have won an Academy Award.
Do you know what? I said I wouldn't do this. I could see a tie happening for Best Actress this year.
Really? I think it's going to Kate Blanchett, personally. But
no, you don't.
She's the favorite, yeah.
I want it to be a tie between Michelle Yao and Michelle Williams.
The Michelles?
So. I do. I want that because Michelle... Now, okay, I seem to be much more about fairness, which these people are not going to care about that. Now, part of me... Okay, Kate Blanchett, she would win 3. That'd be amazing. Very few people have won 3. Also, I think it's fun that she has portrayed Katharine Hepburn, who also had won that many in her life. She played Katharine Hepburn in The Aviator, right? It was The Aviator.
I believe so, yeah.
So that'd be cool. Like, that would be like an art imitating life kind of thing. But I'm kind of tired of seeing the same people. But Michelle Williams, since she's never won, I'd be really genuinely excited for her. But Michelle Yao, I think this is my biggest thing, is that people that are Asian, Black, or really anything not white, the chances for you to get, even in a movie where you're going to be seen and then also nominated, are so few and far between that how many times are we going to see Michelle Yao up there nominated? How many times are we going to see Key nominated? We're just not. I mean, I don't know. Like, Michelle, we're going to see her again. Kate, we're going to see her again. These people are going to be nominated time and time again. So I would kind of rather they give it to someone who obviously had a great performance and is unlikely to ever get it again. I don't know.
Yeah, that's a good point. So... also, Everything Everywhere All at Once has the most nominations at 11. Only 30 films have ever received more nominations than Everything Everywhere All at Once. It's nominated in a lot of categories. Also, every lead actor and actress in Everything Everywhere All at Once and The Banshees of Inisherin are nominated for Best Acting Awards. So anybody that you would consider the main people in those movies got nominated, which is a pretty impressive feat for both of those films. Also, in the Best Actor category, all of these nominees are first-time nominees. They have never been nominated before.
That's one of the coolest stories of the whole thing, I think. Also, Jared, I'm thrilled for Everything Everywhere All at Once, all those people, but I was very surprised / not really supportive of the daughter being nominated.
Yeah, that was interesting. Stephanie Hsu, I think is how you say it. That was interesting to see her get nominated. Other nominees in that category are Jamie Lee Curtis, Carrie Condon.
First time.
Yeah, Hong Chow and Angela Bassett. So solid cat. In fact, that category
that's
is kind
one.
Of a toss up.
That's
yeah.
a toss up.
Yeah.
You know what? Best actress. I could see you being right about Kate. I would love, and we rarely get ties. Like a tie would be kind of cool. I don't know if it'd be cool for them, but if both Michelle's won, I think that'd be really neat.
That would be cool. So yeah, best supporting actress seems to be it's probably the most competitive here. Best actor, Brendan Fraser, I think is going to get that one probably.
I hope so. I really hope so.
I think he's the favorite at this point, but that's a pretty solid category
yeah.
too there.
And it's
so,
not
yeah.
like Austin, I know you and I weren't the biggest fans of the movie. I liked it more than you, but like, I thought he did a fantastic job. Like I thought that performance was stellar, but I saw The Whale this week and wow.
Yeah, where's
wow.
our boy Tom Hanks? Tom Hanks didn't get nominated for Elvis Pinocchio
week.
Movie. But he did get some Razzies.
I was going to say he got Razzies. And then I read about Blonde that like the day, like Anna had just gotten nominated or whatever, but then they had won like 8 Razzies or something, that movie.
Yeah, they got nominated. That movie got nominated for the most Razzies, Blonde. Yeah. yeah. So, which makes sense. It was the worst movie of the year.
But that's what I'm saying. That is so weird that you get nominated for like the worst movie of the whole year and then somebody from it gets best acting nomination for an Oscar.
Yeah, that is interesting. I don't know how I feel about
that's
that.
That's bizarre
so.
To me. Ugh, whatever.
One more fact. Rihanna and Lady Gaga are both nominated in the original song category. Rihanna for her song for Black Panther. Lady Gaga for her song for Top Gun Maverick. So got some pop artists in there, which is cool to see. Of course, Rihanna's going to be performing at the Super Bowl coming up in a couple weeks. So that will be fun to watch. And now we'll move on to our snubs, which there are a few. The biggest one, I think, the one that you and I were talking about the day the nominations came out, is Danielle Deadwyler for Till. She is not nominated for Best Actress. I think this is a huge snub. That's probably one of the best performances I saw throughout the entire year in terms of an actress. And I think she is one of definitely one of the 5 best. I thought she should have been in there for sure. So
I barely have words. This was by far the one that made me the angriest. I know the Academy doesn't do these things to like ruin my life, but I just think, what are you looking for? How could that woman have done a better job? And what other performances? The fact that they thought Anna's portrayal as Marilyn Monroe in the worst movie I saw this year was better than the portrayal of Mamie Till Mobley. Are you joking? Are you joking? I'm furious. Honestly, I'd give him the finger. I really would. The Academy.
Yeah.
I do think it's funny when we sign off and say we'd like to thank the Academy. Some days I want to be like, don't call me Academy.
don't
I'm
talk
furious.
To me, Academy.
Don't talk to us.
Also, the diversity is still kind of an issue. It's a little better this year. We do have some Asian actors and actresses nominated. We have some Black actors and actresses nominated. We have some Irish actors and actresses nominated. So stepping outside of America a little bit, which is always a good thing, but still a lot of white people, especially
it's a lot of white people.
Best actor, best actress, pretty much, you know, best supporting actor actually has the supporting categories have some more diversity in them than the lead categories do. But, and then all the directors are men. Once again this year for best director. So
that one's super upsetting. I looked up what people were upset about. And let me just tell you the women that weren't nominated. Sarah Pauley was not nominated for Women Talking, which is nominated for best picture and some acting, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes. And I believe a screenplay, best adapted screenplay as well, which
Charlotte,
she wrote. Yeah.
Yeah. Charlotte Wells for After Sun was not nominated. Gina Prince Bythewood for The Woman King and Chinonne Chukwu, who we talked about for Till. All those women, their films are either nominated, recognized, or they were, for Till, completely snubbed. But a lot of them were recognized for acting or something to do with it, and the women were not nominated for directing. That's crazy.
Yeah, that is wild that not one single woman got nominated for best director. So also James Cameron didn't get nominated, but like that's fine. I mean,
I don't care.
we can move on from that.
Not really
some other snubs. Nobody from Babylon got nominated. So Brad Pitt, Margot Robbie, Diego Luna, none of them are
Diego Calva.
Sorry, Diego Calva.
No problem.
None of them are in there. Viola Davis, no nomination for The Woman
People
King.
Were furious on the internet. People were furious about Viola not getting nominated.
Yeah, I was shocked to see Viola Davis not get a nomination.
I'm shocked too, but I haven't yet seen that movie. That's one of the ones I really do want to see before the Oscars, but I heard it was great. And Viola, she's another goddess. I'm just like, are you joking? I was furious that Emma Thompson didn't get a nod for Good Luck to You, Leo Grand.
Yeah. That was kind of surprising as well, because that was, I thought, a great performance from her.
I did too.
And then Paul Dano did not get a nomination for The Fabelmans. Will Smith didn't get nominated for Emancipation, but that kind of makes sense there.
That makes sense.
Will can't even go to the ceremony. So yeah, sorry, Will. Yeah. Also, Taylor Swift did not get nominated for her song "And Where the Crawdads Sing." And then Rita Wilson did not get nominated for her song for A Man Called Otto. And Selena Gomez did not get nominated for her song "My Mind and Me." So none of those song nominations. And then The Woman King and Nope did not get any nominations at all. Kind of surprised, especially Nope. I was shocked to see Nope not get a screenplay nomination or a directing nomination or something, visual effects, something. I was kind of surprised to see it get nothing. So
that was one of the movies I kind of rethought about, though, this week, that I thought it definitely fell flat after the first two of his movies. Like, I thought it was really good. It didn't disappoint me, but of movies I remember, the characters, the music, how scared I felt, definitely Get Out and Us were much scarier to me and left a more of an impression.
And then also the acting categories, like we said, are all going to be kind of close races. Best Supporting Actor, it looks like he is going to win that one for Everything Everywhere All at Once.
I'm so happy for him.
And then the other acting categories, Brendan Fraser is the favorite in Best Actor, I believe. Cate Blanchett for Best Actress. Best Supporting Actress is kind of up in the air right now. So,
okay. You know what?
I think Best Picture is kind of up in the air too. I haven't really heard favorites of who's going to win that.
I think Best Picture is a total toss up. I think it's anyone's game. Well, there's a couple that I'm like, no, like Avatar's not going to get it.
Let's hope not.
I don't know. I don't think they're going to say Avatar was the best out of these.
You know what other movie I thought about that got no nominations that I'm sure is probably on your top 10 or in your honorable mentions? Yeah. She Said. Nothing for that movie.
Also, so I was kind of surprised The Menu didn't get any recognition, even for an original concept or like screenplay,
like original screenplay
or something. Like I was surprised by a lot of things. I think this list of nominees is extremely confusing. I like to think, I'm going to tell myself, I think the Best Actress thing is up in the air still. That could just be me, or it could be a year where I want someone to win and they're not going to win. And I don't want to, I love Cate Blanchett. I would love to work with her, but I get tired of seeing the same people. Like, even if Tom Hanks was up there and Brendan Fraser was up there for the first time, I'd pick Brendan. I really would. It's nice to give other people a chance and see, and these people too, most of these people, it really truly is like a 1 in a million chance that this would ever happen to you. So it's cool when people win multiple times, but it's not really a need, you know?
I will say I did appreciate that the Academy chose some popular movies to nominate for Best Picture. I mean,
ones
that everybody has seen. Blockbusters, Elvis, Top Gun, Avatar, Everything Everywhere All at Once did very well at the box office. So I like that. I think one complaint that I hear from people a lot is I haven't heard of any of these movies, like any of them nominated for Best Picture. And I think that's a legitimate complaint a lot of the times, is that they pick these more artsy films that don't show in as many theaters, that don't make as much money, that are harder to kind of seek out.
Yeah.
And so I appreciate this year that they've kind of got a mixture there of, you're probably going to have somebody, if you're watching the Oscars at, you know, at a friend's house or at a party or something, you're going to have people there that have seen Top Gun Maverick and have seen Avatar and have seen. So there's going to be some ability to have discussion about that. Whereas in some years past, it's been very much movies that haven't had a lot of, you know, buzz surrounding them or weren't big blockbusters. So
that being said, I do think this list of, I feel like we have 5 blockbusters, and then I feel like we have 5 of the artsiest movies no one heard of this year, or ones that you and I heard of, like Women Talking. I knew it was coming, but it's like we heard nothing and then it's nominated and now we're hearing all about it.
Yeah, it kind of just came on of late all of a sudden. So yeah. And I even look at like last year's nominations. Like last year did not have, it had Dune was nominated for Best Picture, but that was really the only big blockbuster, West Side Story, but that didn't even do that great at the box office. So,
cool.
And then the year before that was a bunch of random movies, Nomadland, The Father, Judas and the Black Messiah, Mank, promising mm-hmm. young woman sound. I mean, those were not, that was also COVID, so I get that. But yeah. you look at the past couple of years and there haven't been a ton that have been like big, huge blockbusters. I would say Black Panther back in 2018 was probably the last, like, and Bohemian Rhapsody that year were probably the last real big blockbusters that were in. So I think it's interesting that they did nominate some more blockbusters this year. So, okay, well, we will wrap up our Oscar talk here and we'll take a quick break and we'll come back and share with you our top 10 movies of 2022. Welcome back on the Silver Screen Podcast. About to reveal to you our top 10 favorite movies of 2022. Katie had a breakdown there during the break where she rearranged some things. So I think we're ready to go now. So
here's our caveat, everyone. This is only movies that came like that were 2022 movies. So I saw like Drive My Car in 2022, but it came out in 2021, so I can't count it.
Yes. And we did not see everything. So just know that some of us, you know, Katie saw some things, I saw some other things, but neither of us have seen like The Fablemans or Women Talking or some of these other ones that might make it on other people's top tens. So,
and why I had the breakdown is I don't always feel that my Letterboxd stuff is consistent with my podcast scores. And then, so what I did, what Jared helped me talk me off the ledge, I just thought about how do these movies make me feel? What do I remember? Have I given it a second thought? So some of these are probably going to surprise you all, but this is how I feel today, just based on some reflection.
Okay. Well, I feel like we should just go back and forth on our honorable mentions. So my technically number 13 of 2022 is Babylon. So that's where I put it. Did not make my top 10.
Whoa.
I know that's probably surprising to you. So
okay. Wow. I considered moving Babylon, but I liked it.
Okay. What's your 13 in honorable mentions?
You're already making me second guess. Myself. Okay, I'm leaving it. I'm not moving anything. I'm not.
Okay.
My 13 is Black Panther Wakanda Forever.
Nice choice.
I wanted to give it credit. I love how they dealt with grief. Can't get over it. The music, the costumes. Like, I really haven't stopped thinking about it. And it was pure entertainment.
My number 12 is Barbarian, directed by Zach Krieger, starring Bill Skarsgård, Justin Long. This is a horror thriller movie about a woman that stays in an Airbnb and then realizes something is not quite right. So I thought it was normally I don't like those type of movies, but I thought it was very scary. It was very creepy and it was very well done, very suspenseful, pretty low budget movie too. Takes place like all in one house. So that's always interesting. I just thought it was a really good horror thriller movie. So I wanted to give it an honorable mention. So
I heard it was excellent.
It is good,
Funny you mentioned that, because my number 12 honorable mention, or number 2 honorable mention, is The Northman, which has Skarsgård in it as well, Alexander Skarsgård. This was one of my favorite movies up until the end here. It was one of those that I thought it was really good. I do remember the graphic violence. I think what I liked so much about it, though, was the originality. It was such an interesting story. It was a gory graphic movie that I actually enjoyed, and I would watch it again. But it's ultimately not something that I want to watch all the time. And I don't know that it made me think of any new ideas. It wasn't something that, like, I was sitting thinking about, like, what is the meaning of life after it? So that's my honorable mention.
Okay. My number 11, this was tough to leave off my top 10, but it's The Woman King. It's coming in at number 11. So starring Viola Davis, about a group of all-female warriors that's protecting this African kingdom of Dahomey, set in the 1800s. It's got great costumes. It's got great fight sequences. The story is really interesting. So I would say if you have not seen that yet, it's streaming now, but definitely check that one out. One of the more original and kind of unique stories that I think I saw in 2022.
Great. Okay, so my number 11, this was hard for me to take off, but by the end I was like, it was the one that was almost on there. It's The Menu.
Okay.
I really liked The Menu a lot. Thought it was an original idea. Love where it was filmed. Love the actors. It was all great. I did think ultimately the stories or the ones I have left on this list were ones that made me really kind of like think, or they were like blockbusters I just want to watch over and over and over.
Okay. Good. The Menu, good to know.
Number 11. So, honorable mention. Great try.
Okay. My number 10, as we enter the top 10 now, is The Whale, directed by Darren Aronofsky, starring Brendan Fraser. I thought this is about an English teacher who is unfortunately morbidly obese and how he deals with that and his relationship with his daughter, played by Sadie Sink. It takes place all in one room pretty much for this entire movie. It's incredibly well acted. It's got a really interesting story. It's based on a play. But I thought Brendan Fraser was incredible in this. I didn't think I was going to like this movie as much as I did, but it made my top 10. So
awesome. My number 10 is The Banshees of Inisherin. We are going to review this soon. The only reason it's 10 is it's dark enough that I probably won't watch it all the time. But as far as like, and it's also one of the simplest ideas I've ever heard for a film, but it was so engaging. The acting performances were amazing. The time period was interesting. And I really liked where it was set too, in Ireland. So anyway, I thought that was great. It's a stellar movie. It's just not one I want to watch all the time, but it was definitely one that made me think a lot, because especially in this time in my life, so many friendships are changing that it really makes you reevaluate things like that.
Yeah, that one is not in my top 10. I don't know. I don't know why. I don't know if it's because the story was too simple or what, but I just didn't feel like I connected with it as much. But I will say this, the friendship aspect is definitely interesting. Basically, if you don't know, Brendan Gleeson and Colin Farrell were friends, and then Brendan Gleeson is like, I don't want to be your friend anymore, to Colin Farrell. And that's kind of the point, like the rest of the movie kind of follows that and how that affects both guys. So it's definitely, like you said, very, very pretty to look at though. Very good performances. So Martin McDonagh, of course, good script. So, okay, my number 9 is Everything Everywhere All at Once. I bumped this down a little bit. I don't think I enjoyed it as much as some other people did. I think it's still a very good movie. I think it maybe was a tad overhyped when it came out, in terms of people just saying it was the best movie they had ever seen in their entire life and nothing will ever beat it. I don't know if it was quite that good. It was very original in terms of the storytelling, the time jumping, all of that was one of the more original things. But I think for me, I'm looking back on it, I haven't watched it again, and I think I don't know if I will. But it was still good. So it's number 9.
Jared, that's my number 9.
Okay.
I bumped it up. I hope everyone's happy, though. I did bump this up because the more I thought about it, the more I was like, well, was it original? Absolutely. Was the acting good? Fantastic. It was so entertaining. It was such a new idea. I loved seeing an Asian family and hearing their story. I still hate the potty humor. I still don't think it's funny. Fantasy is still not something I'm interested in, but I think overall this movie was so much better than I anticipated, but it's not one I want to watch all the time. But I will tell people out there who are obsessed with it, it was one that I'm so interested in revisiting that I think I am going to try and watch it again before the Oscars, and I won't be furious if it wins. I don't really want it to win Best Picture, but I'm not going to be furious if it does.
My number 8 is All Quiet on the Western Front, directed by Edward Berger. This is on Netflix, obviously a remake of the movie from the 30s, I believe. I have not seen the original. I also have not read the book, but this is a movie about World War I and about men that are on basically the Western Front, the front lines, and just how I think this movie, unlike other war movies, does a great job of showing you the mental aspect of war and how much that can take an effect on you, and how, you know, PTSD obviously is a real thing that people deal with when they come home from war and those types of situations. I mean, it's very emotional story. It's got some really good performances in it. The cinematography is outstanding. The action sequences are really good as well. It's a sad story, but I think it's very well acted and very well told. And my only complaint for this one is I wish I could have seen it in a theater. I think Netflix, putting this on Netflix, it's got some real big sequences that I think would be cool to see in a theater. And so watching it on my home TV, it was still impactful, but I think it maybe would have had even more of an impact if I had been able to see it in a theater. It also is in German, I will mention. So you will have to watch it with subtitles, because that's its original language. So
I have read the book.
Okay.
I read it in high school. I was made to read it. I don't always do well when I'm made to read something rather than choosing. So I don't remember loving the book. But I also don't know that I love a bunch of a war story about men. That's just not as interesting to me. But the book is widely considered to be a classic, which is why we read it. So I'm proud I've read it. But I'm excited to see the movie. I'm interested to see how they do that. So I'll definitely be watching that soon. My number eight is Good Luck to You, Leo Grand. This was one of my favorite movies of the year. It's only number eight really because of maybe watchability or I saw things since then, but this is the only movie on this list I watched twice this year.
Okay.
I thought the performances were amazing. I was borderline offended that both the main actors did not get nominated. I love the story. I think, again, it has real conversations about sexuality, aging, body image, and especially perspectives of how a woman feels when that's happening. And again, I love that it talks about sex workers in a healthy way, but it talks about sex workers that are men. Again, it's just breaking all kinds of barriers. It's things we don't talk about, a lot of things that are taboo. And I thought this movie was just astounding. So number eight, Good Luck to You, Leo Grand.
That almost made my honorable mentions. It was real close. So
okay.
Also, I think that movie just kind of came out of nowhere. Like, we didn't know much about it. And then it was on Hulu and we watched it and both enjoyed it. So
yeah,
if you have not checked that out, be sure to do that. So,
and we did review it if you're interested.
We did. Yes. My number seven is Till. About the life of Emmett Till, obviously a teenager who was brutally murdered. It is not an easy film to watch, but I think it is incredibly respectful to what actually happened and incredibly well acted. It kept me interested and engaged the entire time. I think it is better than your standard biopic in a lot of ways in terms of elevating the material. And I just thought it was very well done. It's got, like I said, great performances. A story that I think people know about, but maybe you don't know all the details about. And this kind of explains that a little bit better. But I had to put it in my top 10. So it's number seven.
Jared, that's also my number seven. I love when we do this. So we've had two so far that are scored exactly the same. Till, to me, is one of the most important films I saw this year. There's obviously so much Black violence, so many things that we've heard about over the years, but I think Till is a well-known story. I think they made this as digestible as can be, but I think it's an important movie. I think it's a must-see. The performances were amazing. And I just think that everything Emancipation was lacking, I think Till made up for. So it was one of the best movies I saw. It was one of the most thought-provoking movies I saw the whole year. It's not one I could watch over and over. But it's one I would definitely watch over or show future kids and things like that, because I think it's an important film.
I think it's probably the one in my top 10 that impacted me the most emotionally of the movies in my top 10. So
actually, yeah, that might be, it's top three for me of those.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
My number six is The Batman, directed by Matt Reeves, starring Robert Pattinson. This one came out back in March. I enjoy the Christopher Nolan Batman movies more than I think I did this Robert Pattinson iteration, but I liked how this Batman kind of turned into more of a detective story, kind of a noir type movie. I thought that Robert Pattinson was very good as the Batman. I thought Paul Dano was good in his role as well as the Riddler. And I just thought that it kind of took the world of Batman, which is obviously like set in Gotham and is kind of realistic, but kind of fantasy as well. It made it more realistic, I think, in this particular iteration than in some previous ones. And I just thought it was a good action movie, and it's an interesting mystery that they're trying to solve throughout the course of the movie. And I liked how it was more of a mystery this time instead of just like a straight action movie. So
my number six is Babylon.
Okay.
I'm going to fight to the death for this one. Now, I see the issues. Jared and I, that was one of my favorite conversations we've probably ever had about a movie. That movie really meant a lot to me. I definitely see what Damien Chazelle was trying to do. That movie also gives me everything I ever want. I want beautiful people. I want dancing, debauchery, drinking, fun, dance sequences, music. 1920s and 30s. Like, I live for this. So I loved Babylon. I definitely see the issues, but overall for me, in terms of watchability and entertainment, it was like darn near the top for me for the year.
My number five is Nope, directed by Jordan Peele, starring Daniel Kaluuya and Kiki Palmer. Science fiction, Western movie. I thought I still think about it sometimes and what it's doing and some of its ideas. And I don't know if I totally understand all of them, but it kept me entertained the whole time. And I thought it was a really original story. One of the more, maybe more original ones that I saw this year. And I like science fiction movies in general. So, and we don't get a lot of good ones. So I thought that this deserved a spot on the top 10. So
awesome. That one got bumped off my list for those reasons. I don't love sci-fi and I didn't understand a lot of the themes and ultimately kind of felt dumb the more I thought about it. So like that I'm not smart enough to get it. So my number five, you already mentioned, it's The Whale. I saw that this week. My jaw was on the floor. I have so many feelings about that movie. I think it's a very much a cautionary tale about more like being morbidly obese. I think, and it's also heartbreaking to see what can happen. It's gut wrenching to see what happens with this family. I did not know it was a play till the end. In the entire movie, I was thinking this would be an excellent play. So I was happy to see that I was on the money there. The acting performances were phenomenal. The story is so interesting. I can't say enough good things about The Whale. So I am 100% rooting for Brendan.
I think that's a really solid choice there. So my number four is a movie you already mentioned, and that is The Northmen, directed by Robert Eggers with Alexander Skarsgård and Anya Taylor-Joy. This is a set in medieval times. It's very violent. It's very gruesome, but I thought it was a very good action movie. I thought Alexander Skarsgård did a great job in it. I really liked the location and the setting and the costumes and kind of how they went around different places in the world throughout the course of the movie. It's got some kind of dark themes in it, but I think it was definitely interesting and one I thought about long after I had finished watching it. I haven't watched it again. It was one I saw near the beginning of this year, but mm-hmm. I thought it was, in terms of action movies, it was one of the better ones. So
it was very good. Made both our lists just on my honorable mentions. My number four is The Batman. I, for the same reasons Jared said, I know it was a couple back for him, but the film noir situation was great. The acting was great. I remember raving about Robert Pattinson's performance, but also that I really liked how he portrayed Bruce Wayne. And dealing with being an orphan and just how his life and mental health would kind of deteriorate under those conditions. Paul Dano scares the heck out of me, but my God, he was good in that role. I just thought it was a fantastic movie. That's definitely a blockbuster, but that is one of the movies in my top 10 I want to watch over and over. Like, I actually want to see it over and over.
My number three is Guillermo del Toro's Pinocchio. This was really high for me. I just thought that this was an incredible take on the story of Pinocchio. It impacted me for sure emotionally. I thought it was very cool. Wow. The stop motion and how they do some things with it being set in Italy, and obviously they're embroiled in fascism and having to deal with that. And I thought the voice performances, especially Ewan McGregor, was very good as Sebastian Jiminy Cricket in this movie. I just thought it was really a fully realized version of Pinocchio, where you could tell Guillermo del Toro had really thought a lot about the characters and kind of making it fantasy, but also setting it in the real world as well. And I think in terms of Pinocchio adaptations is probably the best one. I didn't see the other two, but it was the best one for me that came out this year. And it's nominated for best animated feature film at the Oscars. And I feel like it's probably going to win that category. So
yeah, I would think that's a safe bet. It was good. I'm just overall so not interested in Pinocchio. The story of Pinocchio, I'm just like, I don't care. But I really liked Guillermo's take. I agree. And the animation was incredible.
Yeah, and I don't really like the original Pinocchio. So I think I think this movie exceeded expectations for me, which is why it was so high, is because I went in saying, I think I'll like this a little bit. But then I watched and I was like, I liked that a lot. So I had to get in my top 10.
My number three, I have not mentioned it because I just saw it, is Cha-Cha Real Smooth. I loved this movie. I think Jared and I felt differently about it, but this movie spoke to my soul. Dakota Johnson's in it. I heard rave reviews when it came out. It was kind of more of an independent situation, but I streamed it on, I want to say it was Apple?
Yeah, it's on Apple. Yep.
Apple. And Dakota Johnson, I really don't think she gets enough praise. She picks these like kind of independent films and blows them out of the water. But this movie really touched me because it deals with autism. And I feel like we don't hear about that a lot. We don't hear really a lot about a lot of any kind of developmental delay, see it portrayed a lot. And I don't even know if that's the right word to use, but I love that they showed that in such a healthy, interesting way. And it was kind of a love story, kind of not. They dealt with pregnancy loss. I think we don't see that a lot. We hear a lot about postpartum depression. We don't see or hear about pregnancy loss a lot. I think they dealt with those beautifully, and there was a lot of levity and sweetness in this film. So I could go on about that for 10 more minutes, but if anybody has Apple or they want to pay to see it, Cha-Cha Real Smooth was excellent. It's my number three pick.
Yeah, it was somewhere in like probably the teens for me, but a solid movie. And I think if you liked that one, you'll probably enjoy After Sun too, Katie, because that's about a father and his daughter. So not super similar to Cha-Cha Real Smooth, other than like, you know, it's a single kind of person trying to raise their child. But it is, I think some of the themes in that are kind of similar to Cha-Cha Real Smooth. So cool. I think you will enjoy that as well. My number two is one you already mentioned, and that is The Menu, with Anya Taylor-Joy, Ralph Fiennes. I really enjoyed this movie. I think this is from one of the people that works on Succession in terms of the director. I really like Succession. I think I liked that this movie was kind of an original thriller. I liked that it was, I love stuff about food too. So the fact that it was set in a restaurant, I thought was really cool. I was just engaged the whole time this movie. I mean, this movie felt like 30 minutes to me. I was never bored. I thought the story was very original and interesting, and I want to watch it again. It's on HBO Max now. I haven't watched it again yet, but I just think in terms of like, I like thrillers, and this one was a really good one. So I put it, and it's got Anya Taylor-Joy in it, who is one of my favorite actresses. So it's a number two.
Awesome. My number two is She Said. I couldn't get enough of this movie. I love movies about journalism. Ultimately, this one was bumped up because I thought the acting was incredible, but I think the story is so important. And it was one of those that I cried so much during. It was kind of like A Man Called Otto. I just kept crying. Like, things would happen. I think this one probably struck me because of being a woman, having some experiences similar to this, knowing people who have experienced things like this, being interested in being in the film industry and also being an actress, even if I'm not in the film industry. I just related so much to this. I almost became a journalist. I mean, this movie just like touched me in so many different ways. And to know that it's real, like to know that those things, we heard real recorded conversations. We know Harvey Weinstein was a predator and a piece of human garbage. And it's amazing to see what journalism can do when it's done right and it's done well. So She Said, loved it. And Carrie Mulligan, I mean, one of my girl crushes of all time. So I love her.
I'm just disappointed that movie didn't do better at the box office and also didn't do better like awards wise. I was really hoping either one of those two things would happen, because I think it, like you said, it's an important movie and I think it's a story that needs to be told. And you kind of, it has been told obviously in book form and in newspaper form, but to see it in a movie is a little more digestible in some ways. So I just wish it had made more at the box office and that it would have gotten some nominations too for Oscars, because I think it deserved that. So
The book, if you all are interested in the book, it's a difficult read, as far as like that information is hard to take in, but it was also excellent. And Jared, I think we have the same number one.
I think
film
we do
here.
Too. My number one is Top Gun Maverick. Is that
mine
yours?
Mine too. Okay, and it was there the whole year. It never moved.
Yeah, I think the things I loved about this movie is I saw this multiple times in the theaters. I think it's a great action movie. The fact that they're using real planes to do real stunts just adds that level of excitement and tension to it. It's paced perfectly. You're not bored at all during the movie. It's got a great emotional pull too, which I think a lot of action movies don't, and this one does. And I think that is probably what set it above some other things that I saw this year.
And I don't love Miles Teller, and I really don't like Tom Cruise as a person, but I think that says something, that like, I didn't let that affect anything about the movie itself. It was such an interesting, I remember we have an episode if anyone's interested on it. But Jared and I both loved this film. The action sequences were excellent. It's a bunch of hot people, both men and women. So you're just staring at pretty people the whole time. It's a total blockbuster entertainment movie. You can tell they care about our military, like talking about veterans and things too, and our active military, which is cool. And I think also it was one of the best sequels I've ever seen, because normally they suck and I hate them. And I was so impressed with how they did this. And they also incorporated the original, just enough information that you understood what was going on, but you didn't at all not follow this film or enjoy this film because you hadn't seen the first.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. If you hadn't seen the first one, you can watch this one. If you have seen the first one, you'll get a few little more Easter eggs and, you know, some things they keep the same, but they didn't rely too much on the first one and they didn't make it cheesy. And it wasn't obvious. Obviously, it just wasn't a cash grab. They really put some time and effort into it. And props to Paramount too for not, this movie was done in, I think, late 2019. So they could have very easily put it on streaming, but I'm glad that it got to be seen in a movie theater. Yes. Like I've said before, I think that's the place you got to see this movie, is a movie theater, because it just would not have felt the same watching on my TV.
And I think it says a lot that this movie is nominated for Best Picture. Mm-hmm. And like that we're not just talking out of our rears. And I think it says a lot that this was, for both of us, as far as story and entertainment and everything, it's our number one pick. I think it's the most awe-inspiring? Probably not. But it's one that I would watch over and over again. It was darn near perfect. I absolutely loved it.
It's also nominated for Best Adapted Screenplay, which I think says something as well, because the script is good. And I think that elevates it. Obviously, if you have cool action sequences, that's going to be exciting to watch. But I think because the script is so good and because the story just makes a lot of sense too. They're just doing this mission and they show you parts of this mission and they show it to you over and over, that by the time they do it in the final sequence, you're able to follow along exactly with them, what they're doing, where they are, what part they're working on at what time, without them like feeding it to you basically in that final sequence. So I just thought that was very fun to watch. And the first time I saw this was in a packed theater. Nobody made like a sound. And then at the end, everybody was crying and we were clapping. So,
and I think just what was I going to say?
I don't know.
Okay. I was trying to think, there were two things. I didn't hear a single person say they didn't like this movie. And I almost everybody I know saw this movie, like that I talk to regularly. And almost all of those people also dislike Tom Cruise, but everybody agrees he's off his rocker. That's what it is. It's not like we like want bad things to happen to him. But I thought that was interesting, but I didn't hear one bad thing about this film.
No, I think everybody, like you said, everybody I know that watched this enjoyed it. Young, old, if they go see 50 movies a year, if they go see 3 movies a year, they liked Top Gun Maverick. So,
great movie.
There you go.
Great list. Good job, us.
That's our top 10s of 2022. And you can follow the show on social media at Podcast Silver, Twitter, and Instagram. Search the Silver Screen Podcast on Facebook and find us there. And find our Letterboxd profiles as well in the description of the show notes. And then on our next episode, we'll be reviewing a Best Picture nominee. That is The Banshees of Inisherin, which we will say is on HBO Max too, if you would like to watch it before you listen to the episode. So we have differing thoughts on this movie, so I think it will be an interesting conversation.
Excellent. I can't wait. Until next time, we'd like to thank the Academy.